We are beginning our study of Parshat Vayira into the actual text of the Parsha itself, leaving behind the bigger, broader inyanim for a moment that we discussed throughout the last few shiurim. And as we start our formal study of Vayira, I want to do what we normally do at the beginning of a new Parsha, which is outline the Parsha. Since it was last week's Shnai Mikra Becha Targum, it was last week's Parsha. I know you all know the Parsha backwards and forwards. If not, you could take out your Chumashim, which hopefully most of you were embarrassed enough last time by not having them to have them by this Parsha. Yay for the two of you who do. If you don't have a Chumash with you, please go next to somebody who has one. Because we have two groups. Come on, people. It's a Chumash year. And I'm leaving that on recording. Let's get into two groups. And let's start outlining the Parsha. What is the first major topic of the Parsha? Keeping in mind the Parshiot, Duchot, and Stumot. That's actually the correct answer. Why is that a complicated answer? What gets split?
Their mission.
Well, their missions don't get split. Each one of them has a specific mission, and there are three malachim, so there are three totally separate missions. What are the three missions of the malachim?
Not to comfort him.
More
to
actually heal him. Right? Good. What else?
And then
to destroy stone.
And save the world.
So that gets a little bit interesting. That's, first of all, again, you guys jumped on it very correctly in saying the malachim, which in and of itself is not necessarily correct, but emphasizes and sidesteps the complicated nature of the opening of Vayira. The reason why it's complicated, as I said, take a look at the Duchot and Stumot. The first paragraph of the Parsha is massive and contains many different topics in it. The topics that it contains, shockingly, since we just went through them, are Avram Avinu by the Ohel, where he meets those three strangers who are three Malachim. We tell of the birth of Yitzchak, and then the back and forth, I mean, all of the parsha of Stone, the back and forth between Abraham and God about whether or not he should save Stone, and then the Malachim going to Stone, this people of Stone trying to kill the visitors / Malachim, the Malachim blinding them and then going and saving Lot, his wife, and his daughters, and then the very complicated and difficult story of the end of the parsha, where somehow the daughters of Lot seem to be worried that the whole world is destroyed, have a relationship with their father, and produce Ammon and Moab later on to become very important nations in world history, including the history of Klal Yisrael. That's all Stone. But that's where the Parsha comes to an end. That's where that paragraph comes to an end. What you all immediately jumped on was the fact that, just like this paragraph has many different components, that's reflected in the fact that there are three malachim who come at the beginning of this paragraph, each one also who has their own unique goal, and they all are also grouped together. They come as three malachim. They travel together, and they continue traveling together until their shlichut is over. Even though, as Rashi points out, in source number 2, she'ein malach echad oseh shtei shlichuyot, a malach can only do one shlichut. Every malach has one goal, one tafkid, and then that's it. That's why it's there. So the question, though, needs to be asked on both sides. What underlying theme validates putting all of these topics together under one heading? Which, I don't know, for our purposes, we'll just call it the opening paragraph. This one long opening paragraph, which includes the refuah of Avraham Avinu, the telling of the coming of Yitzchak, and all of the story of Stone. But it's the same question on the other side. What validates sending these three malachim as one group? if each one of them has a different purpose. We wouldn't have been surprised if there would have been an opening paragraph with Avraham, his refuah, and the telling of the coming of Yitzchak, that being its own inyan, it being its own parsha, and then have the stone thing be a totally separate piece. You could have even further broken it down if you wanted to, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through the Torah, is telling us no. Even though there's many different stories here, and many different malachim, because each one of them has their own unique purpose, and there are so many various things happening in this paragraph that we need three malachim to carry it out, even so, I'm setting the malachim as one group, and this paragraph is one paragraph. That's something we're going to have to understand. What is the nature of this opening paragraph? Somebody pointed out, and this threw me until I went back to this Rashi, because I remembered it the same way also, is, well, isn't there a malach who goes and saves Lot? So if you take a look, I quoted Rashi for you just for this whole piece, because this whole piece is complicated. I gave you the whole Rashi. Source number two on your sheets, or source number one is Vinei Shlosha Anashim Nitzavim Alav, that three people come to Avram, which we know are three malachim. And then Rashi here says, based on the Gemara, Echad Levaser Et Sarah, one to tell Sarah, meaning of the coming of Yitzchak. Two, Ve'echad Lahafoch Et Stom, one to destroy Stom. Ve'echad Lirapot Et Avraham, and one to heal Avraham. And again, She'ein Malach Echad Oseh Shtei Shluchiyot, because somehow, for whatever reason, probably because our image of malachim is distorted by the outside world. But whatever a malach is, somehow a malach is only able to do one shlichut. Is limited to one shlichut, to one job. Seder, discussion for another time. What about saving Lot? So Rashi here says in the second underline, O Rifael Sherape et Avraham. Rifael, who came to heal Avraham. Why is Rifael coming to heal Avraham? What? Sorry, why is it Rifael? Milashon Rifua, that's part of what he's about. That's part of the designation of that malach. Their names are meaningful, as we've spoken about in this year so many times, this shirim. Names speak to an essence. Rafael somehow is essentially about refuah, about helping along. That's why in the song, where is Rafael? Mimini Michael, Mismoli Gabriel, Milfanai, Uriel, Meacharai, Rafael. Why is Rafael behind me? In case I get hurt, he's going to help me along. Who's in front of me? Uriel, lighting the way. Lashon Or. Who's to my right? Michael. Some sort of revelation of who is HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of his chesed to reveal himself to us. And then, what's going to be the topic of our shir today, I wasn't planning to quote this, but the topic of our shir today, who's to my left?
Gavriel.
Gavriel, Lashon Gvura, because Gvura is on the left side, as we've spoken about and we're going to come back to again today. Well, everything in Judaism is so good, meaning once you have the tools to unpack it. But Raphael then, who came to heal Avraham, it says, Rafael Shrapeat Avraham, Halach Misham Hatzilat Lot. He also saved Lot. Now that's super weird. I don't know if we're going to have the time to unpack this Rashi, which I spent a lot of many hours this summer contemplating. If every malach, as Rashi just said in the same breath, if every malach can only have one shlichut, what could possibly be the meaning of that one shlichut of Rafael being both healing Avraham and saving Lot? Those are literally on opposite sides of the story. How is that one shlichut? Because you guys brought me there, it's your fault. Because you guys brought me there. Rashi is based on the Gemara, and it's unclear to me. I actually went back and forth via WhatsApp with my Rebbe today. He suggested that it must be that Rashi had a different girsa or had a different source than the one that I found. I wonder if Rashi didn't intentionally change things for the purpose of Pshat. But the Gemara upon which this is based doesn't say that it's Raphael. It says, no, yes, there's only three malachim, but it was Michael who goes and both tells that Yitzchak's coming and saves Lot. Interesting. That's what the Gemara says in Baba Metzia Daf Pei Vav Amud Bet. Explicitly identifies the double shlichut going to Michael and not to Raphael. I don't know yet. This WhatsApp conversation happened an hour ago, so even though I looked into this over the summer, my Rebbe is very linked into the Zman, so I knew he would be more likely to answer and be in the zone of thinking about it within the context of the Parsha. So I went back and forth about it today. Again, it could be that there were two different Girsaot, or two different Midrashim, or two different Maamri Chazal. I wonder if it wasn't intentional and thematic, but either way, open question, which if we have time, next year, we will actually use to assist in our answer. That took us far afield because that opening paragraph is super crazy. This really long paragraph with lots of different things. But either way, that's our opening paragraph, that's what we're stuck with, that's what we're going to have to figure out. What's our next topic? What's topic number two?
Abraham and Sarah
and Grar. By whom?
Avimelech.
What happens to Abraham and Sarah and Grar? Yes. You guys are beating me to every point this year. Good. You guys are super focused. I was going to ask you to go through it and then say, does that sound familiar? To which Hannah already answered, yes, it does sound very familiar to me. We've been here before. Right? Tell me if you've heard this one. Abram goes down to a strange land, tells his wife to pretend she's his sister. She gets taken anyway, a plague comes, and then everybody's saved. We did this already. Why are we going through the same thing with Avimelech? In Grar, that we went through almost parallel with Paro in Mitzrayim in the beginning of Lech Lecha. What happens next in the Parsha? Which the fact that Yitzhak is number three in this parsha just means that the same nagging question that wouldn't leave us alone for the last 2 weeks is still here. Which is, remember, tell me if you've heard this one before, right? In Brit Bin Abitrim, in the middle of Parsha Lech Lecha, God says, you will have children and they will inherit this land. To which Avram says, great, I trust you, I'm going to have kids. And after going through Bibit and Fim, now I know they're going to inherit this land. So what should Avram have done next? Had Yitzchak. What happens instead? We have Ishmael. So we explain why we needed Ishmael. And then we have the announcement by God in the final paragraph of Lech Lecha that no, it's not going to be Ishmael, it's going to be Yitzchak. And because we all think in terms of Parshiot and don't look at the Torah as a whole, we forgot that question. Because then the next thing we say is, well, what's supposed to happen next? The birth of Yitzchak. What do we get instead? Which is not bad. What do we get instead? The telling of the coming of Yitzchak. This endless dragged out story. Fine. Then we're interrupted by stone. Then we're interrupted by Avimelech. And the same questions return, which is, why is it taking so long to get to Yitzchak? Just because we explain the Ishmael paragraphs at the end of Lech Lecha doesn't mean our question went away, because he says not pour into the middle of Parsha Vayira. In what ways, same question, in what ways are the entire story of stone and the Avimelech story somehow necessary prerequisites to the birth of Yitzchak? We still haven't answered the question yet. We just got confused because it said Parsha Vayira. Don't let the Torah fool you like that. It's all one text. It's all one text. It's not arbitrarily split up. It's meaningfully split up into unique parshiot, but it's all one text. What happens next?
Fichol.
What I'm going to call, here's Avimelech 1, and now we've got Avimelech 2. There they make not a breed. Yes, they make a breed, but what's the key word there? A shvua. And I'm going to harp on that because the shvua that's taken in that place is done in the context of Abraham giving Avimelech sheva kvasot, seven sheep. So we have a shvua with sheva kvasot, which then ends up naming the place Be'er Sheva. I'm not going to ask if that needs explanation, because that needs explanation. There's a shvua at what becomes Be'er Sheva over Sheva Kvasot. What's so significant about seven? What's going on there? Also, by the way, how would you have organized this parsha? Let's play if you were God. How would you have organized this parsha? Well, yeah, why is this? We've been waiting for Yitzchak the whole time. We finally get Yitzchak, and now we have a question about Yitzchak, which is, what are you doing in the middle of Avimelech? Why is he interrupting the Avimelech story? What's going on? Have the story with Avimelech, then leave Avimelech, then do the brit or the shvuah, as we corrected ourselves, the shvuah with Avimelech, and then give birth to Yitzchak. Give birth to Yitzchak before you go down to Gerar. But the structure is very weird. What's next?
Akedat Yitzchak. Akedat Yitzchak.
Which is now weirdly divided between Avimelech. We have this similar question. Why not have the birth of Yitzchak be connected to his own story? Yitzchak seemingly plays no role in the Avimelech story. So we have Avimelech who's interrupted by Yitzchak, who's interrupted by Avimelech, who then comes back to Yitzchak. Questions? Then we end off the parsha with... To get to whom? To get to Rivka. We have the birth of Rivka. The genealogy that leads to the birth of Rivka, which is our foreshadowing and leading into the next parsha where we're going to have to search for Rivka to find a shidduch for Yitzchak. Yes?
At which point does
Abraham
send away Ishmael from the first
He sends away Ishmael in the Yitzchak parsha, meaning when Yitzchak's born, that as we now have the tools to understand why, that's going to come along with the separation from Yishmael. Right? Because now there's what to be selected away from. We now have the chosen child and the unchosen child. The berur between Yitzchak and Yishmael is going to happen at that point. It's all in the same paragraph. It's an important point. Yes. Yeah. Why wouldn't we link it to the Yitzchak topic? Why is that? Meaning, in the same way that we asked, why is Avimelech interrupted by Yitzchak, here, why is Yitzchak being interrupted by Avimelech? Especially since we have the birth of Yitzchak, the berur between Yitzchak and Ishmael, and then what should we go on to? The key point, the key story in Yitzchak's life, which is Akedat Yitzchak. So we have a lot of questions. We're going to answer a lot of them, but not all of them, between today and tomorrow. Sorry, today and Wednesday and maybe next Monday. We'll either have two or three shiurim. I don't know if we're going to answer all of the questions, but sometimes the questions are more important than the answers. Every time you come to a new parsha, you have to outline it. Figure out what's happening here. What's going on? Why did the Kadosh Baruch Hu organize the parsha this way? Because these are intentional decisions that are meant to bring out the depth of the essence of what's happening in this parsha. This is the structure of the parsha. If the structure doesn't fit with our understanding of it, it means our understanding is inadequate. The parsha is fine. Our understanding is inadequate. So what's happening here? And how is all of that, as we always also ask, how is all of that linked to the title of the parsha, which should be defining the theme of the parsha, which is the title of Vayira. And that we're going to begin to address today. Ready? Let's do it. Okay. You know how I said that we're going to leave all of our concepts in the previous shiurim behind for a little bit? That's ended. Now we're going to bring everything back. We're going to link into everything that we're doing over Chumash Bereishit, which is why we're doing Chumash shiurim and not Parsha shiurim, is that we're building a narrative here. We're building a story. So let's continue the train of thought of the story that we've been building. We start seeing with Avraham Avinu that he's not just an important individual in the context of Jewish history. Behind his identity and at the depth of his essence is a midah that is one of seven created midot through which God guides the world, and we're meant to rule over our own olam katan, how we're supposed to rule over our internal world. That first of the seven midot is the midah of chesed. Right, and that was all of the last few shiurim. understanding how Avram embodies chesed, how Yishmael was needed to be removed as the psolet of chesed, as the negative extreme of chesed, in order to pave the way to produce Yitzchak in a place of purity and from a place of purified chesed. As we move from Parshat Lech Lecha into Parshat Vayera, we're on the surface clearly transitioning from the individual of Avraham to the individual of Yitzchak, which means we're therefore transitioning from the Midah of Chesed into the Midah of Yitzchak, which is the Midah of Gvura. That's going to be one of our through lines of this parsha, is the transition from Chesed to Gvura as we transition from Avraham to Yitzchak. Let's start developing this. Today, all we're going to do, which is a lot, all we're going to do is understand one aspect of what this Midah of Gvura is. One aspect, this Midot and Sfirot, as they stem from Kabbalah, are obviously infinitely deep. We're barely scratching the surface. One aspect of the Midah of Gvura, as it relates to Yitzchak in the context of this story, which will actually lay the groundwork for us to tie the Parsha together on Wednesday. Okay, we're going to focus on Yitzchak and Gvura today. Let's rebuild what we've built in the past. How did we define the Midah of Chesed? The tendency of anything to go beyond its boundaries. It's neither positive or negative. A positive expression of Chesed, of going beyond my boundaries, is bringing you chicken soup if you feel sick. A negative expression of going beyond my boundaries, and I'm not going to do it this time, is me stealing your pen, right? That's me going beyond my boundaries and taking something. It's beyond my boundaries, but it's negative. It's extreme, unbalanced chesed. It's a problem. But it still is chesed. It's still going beyond one's boundaries. Either positive or negative, the midah is expansive by nature. Right? Adding a new word that we didn't use before. It's expansive by nature. It's moving out. It's moving beyond myself. On the contrasting background of that, how did we define the midah of gvura? How did we define it more refined than simply translating it? Louder. The tendency to remain within my boundaries. The tendency of anything to remain within its boundaries. Anytime I stay within myself, it's an act of gvura. As we said before, one expression of this is on your source sheets as well. Again, it's been on previous sources as well. The Mishnah from Pirkei Avot. Ezehu gibor hakovesh et yitzro. How do we define gvura? Not as strength, not as physical strength. Ezehu gibor hakovesh et yitzro. We quoted the Maharal last time, who pointed out that gvura in this by a human being can't be strength, physical strength. Because what is gvura in the animal kingdom? There, the gibor of the animal kingdom is defined by who is literally the strongest. And if we have gvura as a uniquely human trait, it has to relate to us in a uniquely human way. And so gvura, by us as human beings, is not physical strength, but the inner strength to overcome our yetzer. That when my yetzer decides that it wants to go and do something, I feel it creeping up inside of myself. I feel an urge, a desire, rising up inside of myself. Ezehu gibor? Well, who is a gibor al pi Torah? Hakovesh et yitzro. One who's able to hold that back, to stem that tide, to hold back that tendency, to keep it inside of myself, to overcome that yitzro. It's an inner strength. It's looking inwards. A gibor is one who has self-discipline, who is able to show self-restraint, one who can hold oneself back. Anytime a person says no to something, right, puts up their hands and says no, that's an act of gvura. Coming back to another source that we've seen previously, that's an explanation of the Ma'amar Chazal in source number 4. L'olam yehei smol dochak v'yamin mikarevet. My right hand, the right side, is keneged chesed. So my right hand is always mikarevet, bringing things closer, expansive, going beyond my boundaries, bringing things closer. And my left hand on the side of Gevurah is dochak, it's pushing away. It's saying no. What's another way of saying no if I put up my hand? Stop. Alpi Kabbalah. It's not Alpi Kabbalah. In nature, there are seven colors. There are seven colors in the rainbow, right? Red, orange, green, blue, indigo, and violet. Seven colors of the rainbow. So Chazal linked that because the world is a reflection of Torah, that each one, any system of seven has to reflect it, that every single one of those colors is linked to, somehow inherently linked to, one of the seven sefirot. And wouldn't you know it, what is the color that's associated with Gevura? Red. That we have an innate sense that red somehow means stop, hold back, cease. It's a fascinating thing. There's just an inherent sense that that's what red indicates. And we'll develop that more in other manifestations. Yeah. Well, there are going to be a lot more. Who is going to be the psolet of Gvura? Esav. And what color is Esav? Red. I mean, there's going to be a lot of interesting overlaps in terms of how we deal with that. Once again, you know these basic principles, you can start applying them in different places. All midot stem from these first two primary midot of chesed and gvura, which are opposite in their orientation. Instead of talking about them in terms of how God relates to the world or how we relate to ourselves, let's shift the focus for a second. Okay, stick with me. What terms would we use for these midot of chesed and gevura? What terms would we use to relate to these two midot in terms of how we relate to God? One is a more, think of the definitions themselves, is a more chesed-oriented way that we relate to God. One is a more gevura-oriented way that we relate to God. I understand. It's a common misconception. Almost. Using those two basic frameworks, think of two terms that are very common terms that we use all the time in terms of how we relate to God. One which might be more chesed oriented in its source, in its root, and one which would be more gvura oriented. How we relate to God.
I still don't know.
Can you phrase
it a little differently?
No, it's a little bit of a confusing question. Two modes in which we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that stem from this. My question is that, let's blame it on the question and move along. There's Ahavat Hashem. And on the other side is... No. No. What? How do we actually refer to it? Yirat Shamayim. We don't refer to it as Yirat Hashem. We refer to it as Yirat Shamayim, right? You weren't wrong in terms of Abba and Yirat. It was the other word that you called it. Abba Hashem and Yirat.
Oh, what do I
Shamayim. Ahavat Hashem and Yirat Shamayim. Okay, good, that failed. Let's stick to the concepts.
Wait, can you repeat the question and ask?
Thinking of Chesed and Gvura, not in terms of how God relates to the world, how we relate to ourselves, how are those two in their core? What terms do we use in terms of how one Chesed oriented, one Gvura oriented, how we relate to God? Which one is going to be chesed oriented? Which one is gevura oriented? Yirat Shamayim. Yes. Good. Yes. It sounds great in whatever song it comes from, but we normally use the phrase Yirat Shamayim. Yeah?
What song?
I feel like it's used in a song, no? Did I make that up? I have a very irritating voice in my head that says Yirat Hashem and a non-irritating voice that says Yirat Shamayim. So I feel like it must come from from some sort of American-y Jewish music. Okay. Let's try to refocus. I apologize. I took us off track. Well, everybody else is thinking, why couldn't they get Avos Zimri or Shemayim? That was obvious, so it's on you. okay. Let's think about Avos Zimri and Yerach Shemayim. Okay? Now we know which words are the ones that we're going to focus on, because we just spent a lot of time focusing on them, which is the distinction between Hashem and Shemayim. Why would Ahavat Hashem be phrased as Ahavat Hashem, and Yirat Shemayim be phrased as Yirat Shemayim and not phrased as Yirat Hashem? It's often phrased as Yirat Shemayim. Why the switch there? How is that inherent to the nature of these two terms? We're going to go in the opposite direction. Hashem is more personal. You're talking to Hashem by name. About Hashem, I'm referring to Hashem by name here.
Shamayim is the word shaman, so we can feel it
far. No, what does Shah mean, Hannah? There, it's super far in distance. That's what Shah literally means.
Paul is here.
Sham is there. Meaning, clearly Ahavat Hashem. Everybody be happy. Clearly Ahavat Hashem is focusing on the fact, again, in understanding that this is stemming from Chesed, is going beyond my boundaries to connect to that which is beyond me. There is connecting. That's what Ahava is trying to create a level of connectivity, drawing closer. And I'm drawing closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Ahava and through Ahavat Hashem. I'm referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by name, which is a way of, it's a lashon of closeness. When I refer to somebody by name, it shows that I'm drawing closer to them. Right? If I look at somebody and I say, you, what's the answer? You know that I don't know your name. If I look at you and I say, Izzy, what do you think? That's a much more personal question. Because I'm relating to you. I'm relating to you. Right? So Ahavat Hashem is a way of drawing closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything about Yirat Shemayim is about distance. Shemayim is over there. It's Sham. It's far away. It's recognizing how small I am in comparison to the infinite Creator. How small I am in comparison to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When it comes to Yira, it's the complete opposite. I'm in fear of Hashem, and I'm therefore canceling myself out. These are going to be the key words. I'm therefore canceling myself out in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a mode where God is perceived as far, distant, great, tremendous, and I'm extremely small in relationship to Him. What does this word mean? Yirat Shemayim. What is Yirat?
Fear.
What else does it mean? What?
See.
Lashon Re'iyah. It means to see. Says Hannah, wait a second, this is going somewhere. Our parsha's name is Vayera. We'll get there. Yes. To fear and to see are two very different words. What are those doing is part of the same meaning. That's the beauty of Lashon HaKodesh. You can say, you'll constantly see layers and layers of words in Lashon HaKodesh that are totally different in other languages, but Torah says, no, they're one and the same. A lower level of Yirah is to be in fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A higher level of Yirah, what do we call the Yamim Noraim in English, which should be a mistranslation, but it's not, because it relates to a different aspect of the word Yirah, days of awe. How do I become in awe of something? How do I become in awe of something? When I see something for what it truly is, I'm in awe of it. What is Yirat Shamayim really about? Yirat Shamayim is about the more I have a greater perception, Ri'yah, the more I have a greater perception of who and what God really is, how much He is infinite and I am finite, the more distant HaKadosh Baruch Hu becomes, the more in awe of him I become, because I realize how infinitesimally small and insignificant I am to he who is imperative and infinite. That's Yirat Shamayim. The more Yirah, the more Ri'iyah that I have, the more in awe I have, more fear I have as well. It's a lower level, but the more fear I have as well. But also the more distance I feel, the more awe I am, the more that I realize that I am canceled out in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'll keep linking back to this piece, but since you brought it up, Hannah, yes, if we just said that Yirat Shamayim is connected to Gvura, and that this Parsha is about bringing out Gvura, not surprising that this Parsha is called Parshat Vayira, and that the whole Parsha revolves around this Shoresh. Between now and Wednesday, go back to wherever it is that you left your Chumashim when you didn't bring them here. And go and read inside Parshat Vayira. Go read inside Parshat Vayira. And look at how many times the concept of sight and of fear comes up. Avram sees the Malachim coming. He goes and looks over stone before he talks to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. When the Malachim go and fight back the people of stone, what do the Malachim do to stop them from coming? What do? They blind them. They take away their sight. Then they leave stone. And what happens when Lot's leaving stone? His wife turns back and looks. And so she turns into a pillar of salt. And on and on and on if you read through the Parsha. And Yirah comes up in the realm of Abimelech. I forget exactly what the quote is. We'll talk about it next time. There's no Yirah Elohim here, and that's why I didn't trust you. And thank you, Shane. And Yirah plays a huge role in the story of Akedat Yitzchak, which we'll get back to as well. Yeah.
So how can you go from a place of Yirah to a place of Ahas?
It's not directly our topic, but to give you a short answer that needs to be unpacked, Yirat Hashem is always going to be the foundation of Avodas Hashem and lead to Ahavat Hashem. The way that I understand it, and that's why it's, meaning, the way that I understand why that is, based on Reishit Chochma Yirat Hashem, Dabakad Akadma Yirat Hashem, and all of our sources, Niglan Nistar, Yirat Hashem needs to come first in terms of Avodas Hashem, even though Avodas Hashem and Chesed is always going to be more primary. Is that, how do we define Yira? How do we define Gvura? The tendency of anything to
remain
within its boundaries. Meaning, if I start with Avodas Hashem and I start with Chesed, you know what's going to happen? A lot of really bad things. Because I'm just overflowing, I'm outpouring, I'm going and I'm going anywhere that I want to go. That's going to take me down a lot of paths that I can't go down. If I start with Yirat Shamayim, if I start with Yira, if I start with creating borders and boundaries, the way that I understand it is, then I can let the Ahava loose, because anything that I do in here, I know is good, and the more that I do in there, the better it's going to be. But that gives me my framework. Then I can just pour everything that I have out and know that I'm never going to breach anywhere it's not going to go. If I let myself out first and I have to start to rein it in, and bad things happen. Okay. That's why your eyes going to precede Ahava in my understanding. Yes?
So then how come Avraham is first?
Because the more primary of the midot is going to be Chesed. Meaning, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. The world is founded upon the concept of Chesed. Ahavat Hashem is greater. So when we're talking about the Midot and the Sfirot, Chesed is going to come first, and therefore Avram is going to come first. But as many Mefarshim point out, the one that sticks out in my mind is a much later Avram, but this is dealt with throughout. But the one that stands out in my mind is a much later Avram, which is the Netivot Shalom. The Sefer HaChassid is called Netivot Shalom. In Netivot Shalom, in, I believe it's Parshat Chayisara, which is this week's Parsha on the cycle of the Parshiot, he talks about the wells. So in Parsha Chayisara, all the wells that Abraham dug get plugged up by the Plishtim, and then in this very weird episode, Yitzchak goes and redigs all of the wells that Abraham had dug. And you're sitting there going like, Have you heard this one before? Right, that's now our refrain, right? Have you heard this one before? Right, why is he going and he redigs the same wells, they're the same names. You're like, what was the point of all of that? And Tevot Shalom brings out this point there again. I'm sure it's brought out in many other places, but that's one that stands in my mind. And this is a sefer of Chassidus talking, because Chassidus is emes. He's not going to compromise what he's going to say based on our preconceived notions of what Chassidus is or isn't. He says, because Yira must precede Ava. Yira must precede Chesed. And since Avraham went, and even though Avraham needed to come first, and needed to draw out the wells of Ahava first, Ava can't exist on its own, which is why once he dies, the Plishtim come and are able to destroy everything that he built, and that requires Yitzchak his son to come and redig those wells, wells of Yirah that are founded on Yirah, for the Ava to come out as well. It's an incredible concept. He points out there, but if not, it's a question that we all should be asking, right? At the very beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, what is the first thing that Avraham does, Al Pi Chazal, while he's traveling on his way to Eretz Yisrael? On the way to, already from the moment he's going on his journey, what's he doing along the way?
Like bringing people
in. He has thousands of converts. Where did they all go? Where did they all go? What happened to them? Because once Avraham dies, they're gone. Because the foundation of Avat Hashem will never stand. When you're building in this world, you have to build from the ground up. You have to start with Yirah. And so the presumption is that after Avraham dies, they disperse. And that's why things restart with Yitzchak and then Yaakov. And that's why there are only Shivim Nefesh that go down to Mitzrayim once we get to Yaakov. This was an important tangent because we're about to talk about more and more about the content of Yirat Shamayim and Gvura. While it is the second midah and a lower midah, a higher level is Avat Hashem, a higher level is Chesed, a more primary element is Chesed. Paradoxically, the foundation of building something up is going to have to start with Yirah. It's going to have to start with Gvura. Sor Meira V'Aseh Tov. The Rishonim link Avat Hashem to Mitzvot Asay, and Yirat Shamayim to Mitzvot Lo Taaseh. Same thing. Mitzvah to say, I'm going out of my borders and boundaries. I'm going to do something for God, so to speak. Not that I can really do anything for God. Yirat Shamayim, Vura, Mitzvah Lo Taaseh. I want to do something, but I'm withholding that urge to do it for God. Sor Meira, says the Pasuk, Ve'aseh Tov. First hold back from doing Ra, and then go and do good. Let's come back to our Inanim. Or, let's come back to our narrative, even though all of this is legitimately within our Inanim, very much so. Coming back to Ezu Gibor. We're just coming back around now. Coming back to Ezu Gibor Kovesha Titzro. It's when someone is mevatel, his or her yitzer, not just because of some internal moral value, but dafka because of one's yirat shamayim. That's the midah of gvura. When I overcome my yitzer, when I stop myself because of my yirat shamayim, I suppress that urge or redirect that urge. I stop myself because of my yirat shamayim. I'm canceling out my desire, my will in front of the greater will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That self-cancellation of the midah of gvura, right? Whether it's yirat shamayim, whether it's mitzvah lo taaseh, all the things that we've been discussing up until now, staying within my borders and boundaries, that self-cancellation of gvura is the exact opposite of the self-expansion of the midah of ahava or chesed. There are two opposite modes. Take things one step further. Let's take Ezu Gibor HaKovesh Et Yitzro, this concept of canceling oneself or one's desires in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and take it all the way to its end point. What is it called when I don't just cancel one desire of my being in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I cancel the entirety of my being in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What do we call that? Mesirat Nefesh. Excellent. You're on fire today. I just give it a title so it doesn't be on the top of the sheet. I don't even pay attention to it. Good. It doesn't matter. You're on fire today. So Mesirat Nefesh, right? That's literally canceling my entire being out in front of a Kaddish Baruch. Let's get all the tangents now are being caught up because you cut off all the questions by immediately answering them. Is Mesiras Nefesh, which we say in Kriyat Shema, the pasuk which becomes one of the sources for Mesirat Nefesh, source number 5, V'ahavta at Hashem Elokecha v'chol levavecha v'chol nafshecha. You have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of your soul, v'chol nafshecha v'chol meodecha. The Gemara Masechet Brachot says, source number 6, Rabbi Akiva Omer, v'chol nafshecha. What's v'chol nafshecha? Filu notelet nafshecha. You have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much that you're willing to even give your life, to cancel your whole being before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to give up your whole being for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In our history, who embodies, represents, and personifies this concept of complete Mesiras Nefesh and all of the Mesiriot Nefesh throughout the ages? Who's the individual who's going to do that? That's Yitzchak. And when does Yitzchak do that? At the Akedah. Now it all comes together. At the heart, the essence of Gvura is staying within one's boundaries, canceling oneself out before one's creator, and the individual who was the first one to completely cancel his entire being before HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yitzchak and Akedat Yitzchak. And as I was sifting through an infinite number of sources over the course of this summer, I tripped over this incredible Midrash Sifrei, which I already didn't quote, but I will now share with you, and anybody else who's listening for that matter. Check this out, it's Midrash Sifrei. It says, the Midrash says on the words, Uvechol Nafshecha, take a look, source number 7. Ki Yitzchak. Ki Yitzchak. I was so excited when I saw it, right? Isn't that amazing? We know when you get to an Ebes of Torah, when you come back and Chazal said it first. No one's Mechadish anything, it's fine. When you see that Chazal said it, then you know that the train of thought that you took got you to the proper destination. Kishe Yitzchak she'akar atzma al gabei mizbeach. That's the definition of the V'chol Nafshecha, says the Midrash Sifrei. When people think about Akedat Yitzchak, who do they normally think about? Abraham, which is an interesting thing. Abraham sort of captures all the glory for Akedat Yitzchak, and it's very important that he does. And we'll probably talk about an aspect of that in Wednesday's Shir. But we have to also remember that because of that, we miss the essence of Akedat Yitzchak, which is one of the two words of the definition of Akedat Yitzchak, which is Yitzchak. He was, yes, is it crazy to think that Avraham had to go and sacrifice, bring as a korban, on a mizbeach, his most beloved son who was going to continue on the Jewish people? Yes. But you know who had to actually climb up and say, Abba, can you please tie me down, because it's going to be really scary when you pick up the knife? That was Yitzchak. Not little kid Yitzchak. Yitzchak was in his 30s. Yitzchak was in his 30s. It's also a common misconception. He was much older than Akedat Yitzchak. But when Yitzchak turns to his father and says, turns to Abraham and says, you need to tie me down, which is also beautiful and representative of Yitzchak, because what is it about?
Restraint.
He's saying, tie me down, bind me, that's who I am. Akedat Yitzchak. The binding of Yitzchak, the bringing out of the beat of war, which is to restrain, to hold back, to tie down. Akedat Yitzchak is about Yitzchak. It's about the willingness to be moser nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, about the full emergence of the midah of gvura, fully canceling out one's being. Incredibly, Chazal say, and I gave you one of the two midrashim that I was able to find. Each midrash uses a little bit of a different language, but both have the same endpoint, which is that Chazal said that if you look closely at the Mizbeach of Akedat Yitzchak, you know what you'll find there? Till this day, say Chazal, you'll find the ashes of Yitzchak. Either the source that I gave you says Savur al gabei hamizbeach, or munach al hamizbeach, sitting on the mizbeach, gathered on the mizbeach, you'll find the ashes of Yitzchak on the mizbeach. Why is that surprising? Right, that's a thing. Right? Because if Yitzchak was never actually given as a korban, why would his ashes be on the mizbeach? I don't think it's a far extrapolation, this is the way Mary presents it, is that, yes, Yitzchak wasn't actually shefted and burned. What Chazal are bringing out by saying that Yitzchak's ashes are on the Mizbeach, it means that even if he wasn't physically killed, even if he wasn't physically shefted, the Yitzchak Avinu that got onto that Mizbeach is absolutely not the Yitzchak that got off that Mizbeach. The Yitzchak that got onto that Mizbeach never got back down. It was an entirely different person, an entirely new person, an entirely new being. And there are many expressions of this also even in ways that we're familiar with. What's one of the things that even on the most simple level changes about Yitzchak after he gets down from Mizbeach? He gets blind. How does he get blinded? Malachim cry. Rashi brings down the Midrash that the Malachim cry as he's sitting there, and the tears from the Malachim fall into his eyes and cause him to be blinded. So I track down the Midrash that Rashi quotes, which gives many different interpretations, one of which is also that he opened his eyes and he saw the Shekhinah. And just the experience of seeing the Shekhinah is what blinded him in that moment. It was a transformative experience. We see parallels like this, not to reduce what Yitzchak went through, not to reduce in any way what Yitzchak went through, but in the same way that we hear stories of near-death experiences, of people who get so close to dying, they see something that totally transforms every essence of their being. They're a totally different person after that experience. Again, not to trivialize or try to even humanize, if I would claim, Yitzchak's experience on that Mizbeach. But the Yitzchak that got onto that Mizbeach is not the Yitzchak that came back down. Nikuda, period, end of story. He embodies that Mesirut Nefesh. He is fully self-canceled before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The full Mida of Gvura comes out of the Akedat Yitzchak. What were you going to say, Hannah?
I
was going
to say that he was blind, and that has to do with seeing.
Yes.
And that was so cool.
Yes. Seeing is the through line of the parsha, or your eye is the through line of the parsha.
Yeah.
Before we conclude the shiur, just as one... just as one alternative perception, if you will, of this story. I've never seen it inside. Clearly, I have just not tried hard enough to track it down, because as you've seen, if I try hard enough, I'll be able to find anything at this point, which is really nice. And by the way, the one source of Parsha Noach that I couldn't find, somebody did help me find. So if you're still wondering where it says that people were thrown off of Migdal Bavel, I now have that source. It'll be on the next time you give the shir, it'll be on the source sheet. But you can find anything if you try hard enough. Gagato matzata ta'amin. So I haven't tried hard enough yet. But I remember this because it like rocked my world when I heard this in Shana Aleph. That's how far back we're reaching. I'm not 20 anymore, right? I heard this in Shana Aleph, and it stuck with me. The reading of it stuck with me to this day, which I believe is all Pi Kabbalah, but I've never seen the source inside. That there are, to my understanding, based on what this Rebbe said in my Shana Aleph, there are sources in Chazal that claim that Yitzchak was actually shechted. That Yitzchak was actually shechted. If you want to read carefully the Pesukim inside, certain things that hint to that is the fact that they go up and they walk up together. It says Yachdav, which we'll also be talking about on Wednesday, again and again and again throughout the Akedat Yitzchak. And then after Akedat Yitzchak is over, let's take a look at the Pesukim inside for the two of you have Komashim. I'm going to keep harping on this so you guys bring Komashim, by the way. It's a Komash here. Take a look after the Akedah, at the very end of Parshat Vayira. Perek Chavbet Pasuk Pasuk Yutet, the very last pasuk of that paragraph. Vayashav Avraham. Where's Yitzchak? Why doesn't Yitzchak come down from the mountain? And it emphasizes Yechtav all the way to the beginning of the parsha. Only Avraham comes down in the Pesukim. Additionally, when the Malach calls out to stop Avraham from shechting Yitzchak, the Malach says, Pasuk Yidalef, Vayikra alav Malach Hashem min haShemayim, Vayomer Avraham, Vayomer Hineni, Vayomer Al Tashlach et Chal Hanar, don't send your hand out to shech the child. Then he hears that, he raises his eyes, Vayisavra Metenav, Vayar, again these are key words here, Vine Ayalachar Nechaz Besvach Bekarnav. Then another angel comes down, Malach comes down after he brings up the aisle, and says in Yudalev, Vayikra Avraham Shimakum Ahu Yeshav Yireh, Vayikra Malach Hashem El Avraham Shedit Min HaShemayim, Pasuk Tetvav, now Tetzayim. Vayomer Bini Shvati Nuhum HaShem, I swear to you, says Hashem. If, again, this is all from what I heard from this Rebbe, who says that they also point out, whoever it is that has this pshat in Chazal, that the first Malach doesn't speak in the name of Hashem. Which could be that the first Malach, when he says, don't shech Yitzchak, is still part of the test of Akedas Yitzchak. And then only once he then goes forward and actually does shecht him, despite the Malach telling him not to, then Bini Shvati Nuhu Hashem, hear the words, Kiyan Asher Lo Asid Devar Azeh, since you did it, what did you do? You actually shechted him. That's why he's now coming down and speaking in the name of Hashem. V'lo chasachta et pinchai tikidach, and you didn't withhold your child, but he did! According to Pshat, he didn't. Same thing, it understands that after that first Malach comes down, he then goes and finds aisle achar, another aisle, meaning another korban. And he shechts it tachat bino. It doesn't have to be in place of, that's one meaning of tachat. It could be that he shechted it and gave it as a korban, literally underneath his son, who was still on the Mizbeah, who had already been brought up as a korban. But there's a lot of really fascinating, like, once I've read it that way, I could never see it differently, even though the majority of Chazal clearly understand that Yitzchak was not shechted. How then do those sources in Chazal, or that source in Chazal, deal with the fact that Yitzchak magically reappears in the next parsha? Yitzchak is the first person to be born a... No, simple. First person to be born a Jew. Avraham converts. The first person to be born a Jew. And as the first Jew, Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, he's therefore the first person to experience Tkiyat HaMeitim. Yeah, right? It's an amazing pshat. And it's literally a pshat. It actually makes more sense with the words than the other pshatim. But it is not the mainstream pshat, even if it does exist in Chazal. And I'll throw it out there because it worked last time. If anybody knows where that Chazal is, please let me know. Tell me, text me, email me. The last one came in the form of a picture of text from a text, and it was right. So I now turn to you all to find this source for me. I'm really excited to see it inside. But it's a beautiful pshat. Whether you take this other pshat in Chazal of that he was actually sacrificed, in which case, again, it was the literal Mesiras Nefesh, the first time we see Mesiras Nefesh in Klal Yisrael, or you take the more mainstream pshat. Again, I'm not knocking the mainstream pshat. The majority of Chazal and Rishonim and Achronim and everybody, for that matter, doesn't assume like that. That Avraham Avinu did not shecht Yitzchak. Still, as Chazal bring out, Afarosh al Yitzchak, the ashes of Yitzchak on the Mizbeach. Whether he was literally shechted, probably not. Whether he was literally shechted, or he just went up and something transformative happened because he gave up his whole self before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was a complete canceling of the self before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the full emergence of the Midah of Gvura. The Akedah on the Yitzchak level brought out of Yitzchak and brought into the world the next Midah in the system of the seven Midot, the Midah of Gvura. The Akedah moves us from Chesed to Gvura, from Ahava to Yira. That Yira manifests itself in its full form, the full Kovashet Yitzro, the complete self-cancellation and bitul of one's being before HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the form of Akedat Yitzchak. This fully brings out the Midah of Yira and Gvura into the world. It fully comes into the world through Yitzchak and through the act of the Akedah. We could end here, and we will end here. But just to tie the beginning of the Shir and the end of the Shir together and to foreshadow Wednesday's Shir, Where is the full emergence in this chart of Parshat Vayira? Where is the full emergence of the Midah of Gvura? Akedat Yitzhak, all the way at the end. We'll even put this whole thing in parentheses. This sort of postscript to the Parsha. All the way at the end, it's the last thing. What did we say is the goal of this Parsha when we started Shir? The transition from Lech Lecha to Vayira, the transition from Abraham to Yitzhak, and therefore gets Gvura. So Gvura comes out all the way over here. This Parsha is Parshat Vayira, the Parsha of Yirat HaShemayim, the Parsha of Gvura. How is it that all four of these parts that come before it, why would they precede Akedat Yitzhak? I would have then thought that Akedat Yitzhak should be how the story starts, if this farce is about the emergence of Gvura. What that implies is, and that's what will be the foundation for next year, and the foundation for tying together the seemingly disparate elements of this Parsha, is that something needs to happen for us to be able to transition from Chesed to Gvura, from Abraham to Yitzchak, from Ahava to Yira. And whatever it is, that is the essence or the nature of that complicated transition from Chesed to Gvura, that's what's happening for the first four parts of the Parsha. What we'll explore on Wednesday is, what is it? We can frame it in all different ways. Why are these things necessary prerequisites for the full emergence of Gvura and Yira and Akedat Yitzchak? How does this embody the complex transition from Ahava to Yira, from Chesed to Gvura? How is that embodied in the story of Sodom, Avimelech, the birth of Yitzchak, and the separation of Ishmael, and Avimelech and this Sheva, Shvua, Shiva issue by Be'er Sheva with Avimelech? That's really the underlying question, and that's why, even though it'll be only one shir on Wednesday, we'll be answering most of these questions with a basic and beautiful underlying principle about the nature of the interaction between the Sefirot and the Midot. There's options to be continued on Wednesday.